Welcome back to the Motivational Intelligence Podcast. I'm Sean Johnson. I'm your MC on this podcast where it's our job to study people and organizations, successful people and organizations, and deconstruct, tease out for you what exactly made them successful. What do they do that other organizations or other people don't do? What are the tactics they use? What are the habits they have? What are the mindsets that they use? And today we're talking with Dave Naylor about questions. This is a two-part episode. So the first part is what you're listening to now is about leading yourself. This is a personal one. And we talk about why asking questions is so important in our personal lives in terms of our health, our relationships, our finances. And we actually dive into what are the questions we should be regularly asking ourselves in those areas of our life to ensure we're successful. So like I said, this is a two-part episode. The second part of this episode is about leading others. And so if you're in any sort of leadership role, that's going to be a great episode for you as well. That one comes out next week, so stay tuned for that. And as always, reach out to us on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Too Logical. We want to hear from you. We want to hear what you thought of this episode, what you want to hear more of, what you want to hear less of, ideas, all that kind of stuff, so we can make this podcast as valuable as possible to you. So in the meantime, I hope you enjoy this episode.
The Motivational Intelligence Podcast is produced by the team at Too Logical. Too Logical is an international corporate training firm and the world's leading expert in motivational intelligence, which is the ability to understand, manage, and change the motives people have. Too Logical offers over 30 different keynotes, workshops, and full training courses to small, medium, and large Fortune 500 companies in 53 countries, a lot of which you're probably familiar with: Pfizer, Bank of America, GE, Constellation Brands, P&G, and more. All solutions are completely customized, and the feedback from these sessions will blow your mind. If you have any training or speaking needs or just want to say hey, head over to TooLogical.com.
All right, we're back. Dave, I got a good one for you today.
And what's that, Sean?
Today, we're going to go... I want to talk about questions.
Ooh. What questions do we have on questions?
I got a lot of questions on questions. Questions on questions
Hit
on
me.
Questions.
Hit me with your questions on questions.
So, you know, I think this is something that that you've talked about before in some of our other conversations. In terms of, you know, kind of using questions as a weapon or as a tool to clarify thinking, to you know, whatever it may be in leadership and all those kinds of things. So I wanted to kind of dive into, take a little bit deeper dive into questions themselves. And maybe we start off, why are questions important? Why are asking the right questions important?
Well, we've all gone on the internet and on Google and we're, you know, searching things. And you know, if you type in the wrong search terms or something like that, you don't get the answers you're looking for. So, you know, half the battle in terms of, you know, finding what you're looking for on the internet is really typing the right terms into the, you know, in the search box.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody goes through the, let's try this.
Right.
Let's try that.
Yeah, and maybe I need to word it this way, or I gotta, you know, call it something else, and those types of things. And so in a lot of regards, what, you know, typing those terms in, if you do it the wrong way, it takes that search engine down the wrong pathways, or it's looking for the wrong parameters, those kinds of things. And the same thing happens in our mind when, you know, if we're you know, if you look at our, you know, our mind is basically, we've got our conscious and our subconscious, you know, and it's the conscious that defines our goals. It's our subconscious that creates the plans that manifest those goals into reality. And so much of the way that that those plans come about is really based upon what are the search terms that you're putting in, or what are the questions that you're asking. And So, you know, if we want the architect of our subconscious mind to build things in the right directions, or to lead us in the right directions, or to, you know, notice things are in our environment that align with, you know, that align with where it is that we want to go or what it is we want to achieve, we've got to be asking the right things. Because if we ask the wrong questions, we end up getting we in essence build the wrong plan, if you will, you know. So the, you know, someone sitting there asking themselves, well, you know, why can't I ever seem to get ahead, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, so what their subconscious mind is now looking for is all the reasons why they can't get ahead, you know. Right. So it's actually substantiating what somebody doesn't want, you
right,
know?
Yeah.
Versus, asking ourselves, well, you know, how can I approach this differently so that I can get ahead?
Yeah.
And now our subconscious and conscious is noticing things in the environment that, you know, that will help us to get where we want to go instead of keeping us rooted where we don't want to go.
Yeah, it's looking for solutions instead of looking for problems.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So, okay, so right questions, right plan, wrong questions, wrong plan. And that kind of will establish the direction that we're going to end up going in. So maybe let's look at this from two perspectives. You've talked a lot about using questions in leadership.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's one of the three silver bullets of leadership.
Yeah, so it's a silver bullet. Let's look at it from two different perspectives. So let's look at it from leading ourselves and leading others.
Mm-hmm.
What's the most important question or questions to be asking ourselves in terms of leading ourselves to where we want to go?
That's a big question.
Yeah. I told you I got questions on questions.
I guess so. I remember many years ago, I had a gentleman who is actually the father of a friend of mine, and he had asked me to go to lunch with him. This is probably 20 odd years ago, and we're sitting at lunch and he said, he goes, I know what you do for a living. I know you help people. And he goes, I'd like to ask for your help if I could. And so I said, what regard, you know? And he said, I work in an industry where, you know, if somebody is successful, they can make a very comfortable six-figure income for themselves. He said, I've never made more than $60,000 in a year in my career. And he goes, and because of that, he said, I've always kind of struggled financially. He said, you know, I've got high credit card debt. He said, my wife and I, we can't afford to travel to go visit our son who lived in another state. He said, I've never really been able to dial in the combination. And he said, I'd like to ask, you know, to see if you could help me to do that. And, you know, so we talked about, you know, what he was struggling with and why he thought he was struggling with it, and, you know, and all of those types of things. And then it was probably a couple weeks later, we went out to lunch again. And I remember we had a conversation that lunch, and I said, what I'd like to ask you to do is just really one thing. And he was, what? And I said, I want you to ask yourself a question. I'd like you to ask yourself a question first thing every day when you get out of bed. And he goes, well, what's that? And I said, I'd like you to ask yourself, you know, who do I want to be today? Hmm. And I said, there's one of two responses, and I want you to pick one of those two responses for that day. I said, do you want to be the peak performer, or do you want to be the underperformer? And I said, I don't care which one you pick. I said, but realize that there is an upside and a downside to each of those. You know, I said, if in the morning that you wake up and you say to yourself, I'm going to be the peak performer today. I said, you know, realize that the upside of making that decision is that, you know, you're going to become more financially successful. You're going to have more opportunities open up to you in life. You're going to have more flexibility. You'll have less stress from your financial pressures. You'll be able to, you know, spend more time with your son and those types of things. I said, that's the upside of being the peak performer. I said, the downside of being the peak performer is that you're going to have to work an honest day. You know, you're going to have to get outside of your comfort zones. You know, you're going to have to, you know, be more proactive. I said, you're going to have to face more of your fears. I said, that's the downside of that. And I said, so that's what the peak performer looks like. I said, the underperformer, I said, the upside of deciding that you want to be the underperformer today is that, you know, if you want to go to work and leave at 1 o'clock so you can come home and watch a ball game on TV, you can do that, you know. I said, the upside of being an underperformer is that you don't really have to push yourself. You don't have to challenge yourself. You have to face your fears and get outside your comfort zones. I said, you know, you can pick and choose the easy things. You know, I said, that's the upside of being an underperformer. I said, the downside of being an underperformer is that you continue to struggle financially. Your credit card debt will continue to mount. You'll continue to have stress and pressures because of that. You won't be able to see your son as often as you'd like. I said, every morning when you get out of bed, I said, just make that one simple, you know, ask that one simple question of yourself. Who am I going to be today? And stick with it. And I said, whichever way you answer that question most frequently will govern what happens in the days, weeks, and months ahead. I said, but just make it a conscious decision rather than a default decision.
Why is that particular question so important?
Life is all about momentum. And it's all about consistency, you know, and so consistency, we build momentum either positive or negative based upon that consistency. You ever watch the A&E channel on cable?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's still on or not, but they used to have a program called Biography, and it was a great program. They basically like kind of told the life story of you know different people and stuff. I love watching. I always like biographies anyhow. I always thought it was kind of cool to kind of understand the backstory on people and stuff And I remember watching one of those years back, and they were telling the story of a guy, Haroldson Hunt. And so Hunt was an oil wildcatter back in like the 50s and the 60s and stuff down in Oklahoma and Texas and things like that. And it was a pretty incredible rags to riches story. I mean, the guy was basically destitute, and then he ends up being what was reputed to be the wealthiest man in America in the early part of the 1970s, right? So they're telling this, you know, pretty cool story. And at one point they had an excerpt of an interview with Hunt. Now he passed away. I think he passed away like in the mid 1970s or something like that. But this interview had been recorded in the early 70s. So the person who was interviewing him asked me, said, he goes, Mr. Hunt, he said, you know, you're a highly successful individual. You're one of the wealthiest people in the world. He goes, if you had to give advice to anybody else about what it takes to be successful, he said, what would it be? Right. Now Hunt, he was this, kind of fine Southern gentleman type of thing. And I'll try to do his accent, but I won't do it justice. But he kind of leans back in the chair and he thinks for a minute. And then he said this. He goes, well, I've started hundreds of companies in my lifetime. And I've made myself billions of dollars. He said, but... He goes, and what I found is I found that the process of becoming successful is really relatively simple. Because it only requires two things of an individual. He said, first, that they know what it is they want to achieve. And second, that they willingly pay the price to get it. He said, but what I found is that most people, they don't really know what it is they want to achieve. And even if they do, they're not willing to pay the price to go and get it. And
it's a pretty good accent.
It's probably a good thing that Harrelson's dead now. Yeah. He's probably rolling over in his grave. But I remember when he said it, I kind of sat there and I thought about that, and I realized he's 100% right. You know, most people. They sort of live their lives by default, you know. They go through each of the days. They react to whatever their most pressing fires are. They try to get their bills paid and get home from work in time so they can do what they need to do in the evening and all of those kinds of things. But how much time do they spend really stepping back and thinking about what it is they really want to achieve?
Yeah,
you know. And even for those who do, do they willingly pay the dues to get it? Yeah. And that's, when I go back to, my friend from that first story, he was living his life by default and largely based upon his comfort zones. He was doing what was easiest for him, what was most comfortable for him. What he wanted in life is he wanted the upside of being the peak performer, and he wanted the upside of being the underperformer.
Right.
And he didn't want the downside of either. And that's not how life works. And yeah. So, we have to consciously decide what it is we want. We're all hopefully gifted, 70, 80, 90 years on the planet, which isn't a lot of time. And what do we really want to accomplish in that, in that time frame and, in those key areas of our lives? And then once we've really made that decision, then commit to it and then we'll just willingly pay the dues to get it.
Yeah. I think that's so true too. A few times I've asked people, and I'm sure you've asked people hundreds and thousands of times, but when you, it's interesting when you ask somebody, what do you want?
Mm.
What do you want in life? Most people don't know.
Mm.
Very few people, a lot of people will stumble around, mm-hmm. Or they'll make a witty remark or something like that. But if you dive down again, what do you want?
Yeah.
Most people have no clue.
No, they haven't. I mean, you see the statistics on goals and things like that, and they're always, the people who set goals are always, I've seen 3%, I've seen 1%, but it's a tiny number.
Mm-hmm.
I remember years ago reading a study, and in the study they talked about the fact that for most people's goals they set in life, for most people, that the average time horizon of how long it takes for them to achieve the things they want is a 2-week cycle of time. It's literally paycheck to paycheck. What do I want to get done this weekend? What do I got going on tonight? Yeah. It's the existence side of what they want,
yeah,
but not really the enrichment side of what they want.
Yeah, they're not seeing the horizon.
Right. So what really brings happiness, what really brings joy into people's life, what gives people a sense of pride or a sense of accomplishment, what brings meaning into their life? Because success is, you know, it can't be universally defined. We've all got, you know, we've all got different ideas based upon our value system and all of those things of what it really means. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're the ones who, you know, we're the director of our life. And, you know, what are we really directing it to? What's that final scene? You know, what do we really want it to look like?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the reality is most people don't know what they really want. And even for those that do, a lot of times you could see that, and you can just feel that either they don't really believe that they can have it,
mm-hmm.
Or that they deserve to have it, or they don't really understand what it's going to take mm-hmm. to get it.
Yeah.
Which leaves a very small sliver of the population.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's go to, you know, in terms of, I think you postured some questions that that I think would a lot of people would be interested in. How do I figure this out? So if we're sitting, you know, somebody's sitting here and they're saying, okay, well, maybe I really haven't taken the time to figure this out, you know, figure out what I really want, where I really want to go. What are the questions that I should be asking myself in terms of figuring that out and figuring out how to lead myself mm-hmm. and, you know, in my personal life?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you go down the personal road, there's kind of three, you know, what we've always talked about, you know, as we're working with folks and things like that, is that there's, you know, there's obviously a lot of different aspects of our personal lives, but you can sort of look at it as three big categories, if you will, of mm-hmm. you know, of our personal lives. And so if you're gonna try to go down that pathway of how do I begin to define this, it's easiest if you can quantify it that way, because then it seems a little less overwhelming, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, what we talk about with folks is we'll talk about you know, financial, there's relationships and health are really those three big buckets in one's personal life. And so if somebody's going to, if they're going to begin to define their life, then, you know, what they want their life to be, it's really best to look at those three categories as a great place to start. What most people will typically do is they usually start on the financial side, you know, mm-hmm. and I think the reason they start there is because it's, you know, it's a big stressor for people in life, uh-huh. you know, it's the number one thing that couples fight about, you
yep.
know, it's, so, you know, if people have thought about anything, you know, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of their personal life, that's probably the one category.
Yeah, and it's quantifiable.
Yeah,
like it's, you know, it's the you could put a number to it,
right?
Which is a little bit easier.
You know, the interesting thing is that what studies have shown is that it's the quality of our relationships and the quality of our physical health that really brings much more happiness to people than
yeah.
the quality of their financial life, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, people, yeah, they usually start on the money side, even though right. it's other things that at the end of the day ultimately, you know, play a bigger role in what's going to put a smile on their face.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, yeah, there's plenty of people that are rich and miserable.
Yeah, I know. What was it? Robin Williams said that cocaine is God's way of telling you make too much money.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of truth to that. yeah, no, and I think those are good, you know, make sense category. From a category perspective, it kind of fits into. I was listening to an interview with Naval Ravikant, who's mm-hmm. a founder of AngelList out of Silicon Valley, okay. and he was kind of talking about his philosophy was everybody wants to be rich, everybody wants to be happy, everybody wants to be happy, mm-hmm. Healthy,
mm-hmm.
and you know those kind of three things. If you're rich and you're happy and you're healthy. You're pretty good.
There you go. That's a pretty good trifecta.
Yeah,
that's
a pretty good trifecta. Yeah,
that's a pretty good trifecta.
And I think that basically lines up really well yeah. to those categories yeah. of, you know, the financial is obviously the rich and health is healthy and the relationships seem to be the biggest driver in yeah. what makes us happy. All right. Well, let's dive in a little bit to each of those. So If we're looking at, let's start with, say, health.
Okay.
So if we're looking at health, what questions matter? What questions should we be asking ourselves?
You said something a few minutes ago. You know, you said, you know, you talked about, you know, why, you know, why people don't have a, I think the way you said it is, you know, why they haven't thought about what they want in life, you mm-hmm. know, and you said either they, you know, they don't believe they're worthy, or mm-hmm. they don't believe that they can do it. I think were the two things that you said. I'm paraphrasing, yeah. but yeah. hopefully I got that right.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, tying back to that, and I absolutely believe that to be true. I think that part of why people struggle in the different areas of their life is because it does seem a little bit overwhelming. It does seem a little daunting. Like, you know, you look at these kind of big categories and, well, how do I even begin to wrestle control in these areas?
Yeah.
One of the things that, you know, that we talk about a lot when we're doing the leadership training classes and things like that is, you know, we talk about that concept of high payoff activities mm-hmm. and, you know, the fact that in any given role that there's always between 5 and 7 things that are really the mission critical things that have the biggest impact on the metrics or the outcomes of, you know, somebody's success in a given role. And we talk about that in the professional sense, you know. So if you're a salesperson, there's, you know, 7 key things that if you really are good at these things, then, you know, you're going to be pretty successful. If you're an engineer, then it's these 7 things. And so it changes from role to role. But that's not just true in a person's professional world, but that's also true in our personal world as well. So you can step back and you can look at, you know, like each one of these three areas and say, well, what really are the high payoff activities of, you know, building, you know, a healthy life for yourself? And, you know, interestingly enough, if you really peel back the onion and, you know, and you know, go out and buy yourself 100 books on health, and
yeah.
you'll very quickly distill out what are these high payoff activities? What yeah. are the most important things? Because every book will talk about them. They'll say it's slightly different, you mm-hmm. know, so that they can justify selling another book.
But, exactly.
Yeah, they basically say the same thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you look at the key things as it relates to health, you know, it's and actually, you know, it's interesting. You had an impact on this first one. You know, I remember I'd had people for, I don't know, probably for 3 years, my wife included, mm-hmm. Who, you know, kept, you know, talking to me about, you know, the importance of meditation and what a difference it makes and all of that. And then I remember, I think it was it might have been last year, early last year or something like that, or maybe it was the fall of the year before. We were all out to dinner, and you got mm-hmm. up on the horse about meditation, mm-hmm. right? And I don't know what it was you said that night, but for whatever reason, it kind of sparked me. All right, I've had enough people yelling this in my ear. Maybe I need uh-huh. to pay attention, you know? Yeah. So you were my tipping point on
all
that,
right.
you know?
I'll take it.
There you go.
Yeah, Michelle thanked me for that.
Yeah, there you go. So, you know, I think that the first high payoff activity of building, you know, a solid health is getting right in your own head. And I think meditation plays a big role in that. You know, it helps you to, you know, it helps you to get mentally centered. It helps you to get, you know, calm. And it you know, it helps you to get out of your head in the bad ways that you're in your head kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, that kind of mindfulness that comes from that, I think is a big aspect of getting your health right.
Everything feels less overwhelming,
isn't it though?
Yeah, it's kind of just you're more observing than being sucked into everything.
Yep, that's exactly. It gives you the ability to be mentally slow.
Yeah,
you know? Yeah. It's and that is so absolutely true.
Yeah.
You know, eating right is another one, and eating right is you know it's. Avoiding foods that you know are bad. It's just moderation and portion control.
Right.
You know, there's no rocket science to it. You know, Getting enough rest. You know, we always talk about sleep and the importance of sleep, and how that's when our bodies rejuvenate and our cells clean themselves out and all of that kind of stuff, you know. So getting right in your own head, eating sensibly, getting enough rest, drinking enough water, is a big aspect of it. Getting exercise, it's another one I fought for years making sure you maintain your flexibility. So what I found as I've gotten older is a lot of injuries happen just because you're not flexible. When you're a kid and you're
like a rubber band.
Oh my God. It's like we used to jump off the roof of houses in the sand piles and walk away from it, My God, if I did that now, I'd be in traction,
It is amazing. You see these little kids, they go down and their bodies end up in a pretzel and then they just pop right back up. How did you do that?
Yeah, it's flexibility, you know? And then last but not least, it's staying away from the destructive habits. Or bad habits. So it's, if drinking to excess, smoking, drugs and those kinds of things. And, if somebody can just, focus on those things, interestingly enough, I think if we went back and counted, I think there are 7 of them.
Yeah.
That really is the key to beginning to, have a level of success in your health. So somebody might be off track in all of those areas. They might be off track in some of those areas. Most people I don't think typically are off in all of them. Yeah. I think so much of the key is just picking one of those areas, picking one aspect of that, So whether it's, whether it's starting to meditate and getting an app. So you turned me on to Headspace.
Yeah.
I got a new one that was, it's called Waking Up.
Oh, with Sam Harris.
Yes.
I've heard of this
one.
Yeah. That's your new one?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. All so right. I got to check that one out.
I'd listened to him do a preview podcast on it. It was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And so I actually just downloaded that about a week or so ago. I'll give him a little plug.
Okay. There you go.
No royalties getting on that.
Shout out. Yeah. Shout out Sam Harris.
Yeah. But, so pick one of those areas. So whether it's meditation, whether it's starting to pay a little more attention to what you're eating, drinking more water. But just, pick one of those areas and then ask yourself, what is one simple thing that you can do today to get better in that area?
Yeah.
So it's not some overwhelming, I gotta lose 50 pounds or I got it, because that's what kills people is they're overwhelmed by the magnitude of it, but just focus on what is one simple thing that you can do today.
Yeah.
We talked about the cumulative effect and success begets success. So,
interest.
Exactly. So if people can just start building that momentum with each and every day, 2-3 days it doesn't make too much of a difference, but all of a sudden your weekend it's starting to make a difference. Mm-hmm. And then you're 3 weeks in and 8 weeks in, and pretty soon you're miles down a different pathway than you what you would have been otherwise.
Yeah.
And the cool thing, and going back to what you said before, that that's what gives people the strength or gives people the belief to go back and tackle other areas of their life is just the fact that they've made progress in this one area. They've proven to themselves that they can do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's the little, I know for myself, it's so easy to get caught in the trap of you want to do everything at once.
Yeah.
Especially when you make the decision like, okay, I'm going to, you're setting a goal for yourself or you're saying, all right, I really need to pay attention to my health.
Yeah.
And then you look at those areas and you're like, all right, there's 7 of them and I'm off on 6 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it just feels so overwhelming and insurmountable that you try to do them all at once, but it's so much that you never really get traction on any one of them.
Exactly.
You're kind of like, piecing things together.
Yep. And then you start feeling bad about yourself.
Yeah.
And then you're like, next thing you got a Hershey bar in your mouth. And,
Exactly. I'm no good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that even just how can I get some small wins?
Yeah.
You know, I think the momentum thing is so under appreciated, mm-hmm. Underutilized when it comes to you know, building these habits, yeah. and getting back on track.
Well, and that's when we talk about it intellectually, it makes sense, but I don't oftentimes think that we put enough weight or thought behind the fact that everything is cumulative.
Yeah.
And so you don't put on 10 pounds overnight. You put on 10 pounds because you had 100 extra calories today and 200, tomorrow, and all of a sudden...
You go to the gym the next day.
Exactly. So it's how do you begin to accumulate positive momentum? And that's where that one simple thing today...
Yeah.
Helps you to begin that process, and it builds your confidence, it builds your momentum, it builds your belief.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that even goes back to the brilliance of that, the one question from your friend, I think Ron, right?
Yeah.
The one question of who do I want to be today?
Yeah.
I think even just adding today on it,
yeah.
it makes it so much more manageable. You ask the question of who do I want to be, it seems mm-hmm. so overwhelming and esoteric and abstract, and how could I possibly
yeah.
figure that out? But if it's, all right, I got, I'm up, it's 7 a.m., I got the rest of the day ahead of me, all I got to decide is who I want to be for the next 16 hours.
Yeah. Yep.
That's a lot more manageable
yeah.
Than, making the broad, coming up with the answer to the yeah. broad question.
Yeah. Well, and there's a psychological basis in that, too, that goes back to our subconscious. Our subconscious, it doesn't live in the future. It doesn't live in the past. It lives in the here and now.
Yeah.
And so... It's, it's focused on, on what are the plans that we need to focus on right now.
Yeah.
And, it'll draw from, experiences in our past to come up with that plan that we're executing today. But, by making it today, we're aligning with the way that we're built. We're aligning with how our subconscious develops plans.
Yeah. No, it absolutely. It reminds me of, there was the famous commencement speech by Steve Jobs at Stanford in 2005, I think it was. But he talked about how every morning he would get up, he'd look himself in the mirror, and he would say, if today were the last day of my life, would I want to do what I'm about to do today?
Yeah.
And if the answer was no too many days in a row,
yeah.
then he knew something would
yeah.
he would have to change. But again, I think that's the power of questions and the power of not, even that question is not, what do I want to do for the rest of my life?
Right.
But what do I want to do today?
Yeah.
And it makes it so much more manageable.
Yeah.
And you can build that
yep.
that momentum.
And what's the one simple thing today?
Yeah.
That gets you one step closer to, to whatever it is you want to achieve.
Yeah. All right. So we talked health. Let's dive into the other two. Let's try relationships.
That relationships are, I that's a great one. Let's see, let's think about this for a second. I remember a guy in one of our groups years back, and he'd been divorced a number of times and in therapy and all of that kind of stuff. And so I remember him talking about relationships, and it was like a lesson that he had learned in a therapy session, and it was really about listening, and conditioning ourselves to be mentally quiet when somebody else is speaking. Traditionally, we kind of fill in the context of what we think people are going to say after we listen for the first few words, and then...
Or you're thinking about what you're going to say next.
Bingo.
Yeah.
So really conditioning ourselves to be mentally quiet so that we can listen and we can really hear what somebody else is saying. I think that plays a huge role.
Yeah.
In relationships. you know, this is one that, I've kind of, I've learned, you know, in my relationship with, Michelle, is that, you know, so often we get disenchanted or unhappy when, you know, somebody doesn't, you know, they don't do something the way we think they should do it, or they don't do what it is we want them to do, or those kind of things, you know. And I think we have to, you know, another key in relationships is making sure that, you know, we don't expect the other person to read our mind.
Yeah.
And nobody's in our head but us, you know. And and so, you know, they're not going to live up to our unstated expectations, you know.
Yeah.
And likely they won't even live up to our stated expectations,
right.
You know. So you know, let those things go, and then make sure that, you know, that rather than holding stuff inside, that you know, we communicate what it is that we're really thinking, what it is that we're really feeling.
Yeah. I think that's so, it's so easy to do, to just, you know, you end up, you know, somebody, you know, does something that frustrates you, whatever. You end up just walking around with this quiet frustration about whatever it is for, you know, however long, couple days. Like, I can't believe that.
Yeah.
You know, they did that. And it's, all right, well, did I actually, you know, say anything out loud other than just, you know, be grumbling in my own head?
Well, you know, and then if you're married to that person, so you walk around with that one, and then you walk around with one from a week later, and you walk around from a week after that.
They pile up.
Exactly, and all of a sudden you got this crushing pile of things that are bothering you that you never said anything about, and then you blow up about some stupid little thing, and they're looking at you going, where the hell's this coming from, you know?
It's the dishes.
Yeah, exactly, you know? And you know, and they don't realize that, you know, there's a 1,000-pound avalanche behind the fact that dish is dirty.
It's just the one that you know, the straw that broke the camel's back.
Exactly. So, you know, if you can get that stuff out and don't carry it around with you, you're happier, and you know, that works.
Life's much lighter that way.
Oh, isn't it though?
Yeah.
Well, here's another one. You know, learning to forgive and really meaning it. You know, so this was one, you know, I know it took me a while to learn. You know, I would forgive, but in the back of my mind, I was still kind of, you know. So if you know, you can say you forgive, but you know, it's forgiving means letting it go. You know, don't carry it around with you after that.
Yeah.
Put it on a shelf and forget about it, you know.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I think another one, you know, we talk about this, you know, actually in a lot of our training classes as well, is, you know, it's about, you know, finding out what is really most important to that other person, and, you know, what it is that, you know, they value, what it is that really means something in their world. And then, you know, and then taking that and making it important to you, you know. So it's, you know, my wife Michelle and I, I mean, we don't, you know, we have a lot of similar values, but we also have some different values.
Sure.
And you know, her values are no less important than, you know, than my values are. But it's taking the time to understand and appreciate those things, and you know, and elevating the importance of you know, and I think also this ties back to that first one, listening, because if you really listen, that, you know, people will tell you what is most important to them. You know,
yeah.
They'll tell you what's on their mind. They'll tell you what it is they value. What means something to them, and then mentally put weight on that in your head, make it important to you. I think that's a huge one.
Yeah. Well, I think most people never ask.
No,
you
they
know?
Don't.
And I think when you do ask that question, it sometimes surprises people because they're not used to getting the question.
Yeah.
But it's so powerful when you do.
Yeah. And just like, you know, just listening, you know, because they give you those little clues about things. Like, you know, for you know, it's funny, like with Michelle, if she gets up before me in the morning, and you know, if I get up and I make the bed, that's one of those things that, you know, for whatever, I mean, candidly, I could care less about the bed, right?
Yeah.
But that means something to her. So, you know, I get up and I'm like, okay, I'll quickly make the bed, kind of thing.
Yep.
And you know, so, and I would never have known that, but I just you know, I, you know, she went yammering away one time talking about it. And I'm like, oh, all right, that's something that's important to her, yeah. You know? So I, you know, I think that's one of the big things in relationships. And I think, you know, we're coming to this kind of empty nest stage, you know, in now with our daughter graduating and the, and what I've seen, what I see a lot, actually, I've seen a lot in our community, is that the, you know, the last child goes off to college, and shortly thereafter, the parents end up divorced. You know.
Yeah.
And you know, and I think part of the reason why that happens is because they outside of the kids, mm-hmm. they didn't have any common goals that they were working towards. So all of a sudden, once the kids were gone, so too was the commonality.
Yeah.
And they're looking at you like a couple of strangers.
Yeah. They both had the common goal of raising the kids,
right.
And making them successful, making sure they're happy, healthy, and you know, sending them on their way. But then what?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and so I think that's a big one. I remember years ago, I was going out to dinner with a buddy of mine, Rich Warren, and I asked him what he had going on that coming Friday, and he goes, oh, it's a date night. And I kind of looked at him. I'm like, you know, I know Rich's wife, you know, so I was like, a date night? I said, Rich, is there something you want to tell me here, you know?
Yeah.
And he looks at me and he smiles. He goes, it's not what you think, you know? he said, you know, he goes, my wife and I, we set date nights. He goes, because if we didn't, then everything else would creep in. And he goes, and those are just, it's our time for one another, you know, to spend time together, to laugh, to have fun, to, you know, kind of, you know, remind ourselves how much we enjoy being with one another, you know. Yeah. And I'll never forget, I thought, that had never crossed my mind at that point, you know.
Yeah.
And Michelle and I started doing that, you know, shortly thereafter. So I think it's, you know, it is. It's about spending time together. It's about having fun and not forgetting why you were attracted in the first place, you know. So I guess if I had to look at relationships, I'd say those are probably the key things. I don't know if there was 5, 6, 7 or whatever there were there, but
somewhere in that range.
Yeah. You know, we could probably do a whole podcast on just relationships. It's, you know, I think that more than probably anything else is it is the real key to happiness. It's that quality of the relationships that we have in our life.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. We're going to do that. I'm locking the door here. You're not leaving here until we do that one.
Okay.
So, you know, for relationships, what questions should people be asking if they want to build better relationships? You know, those are the keys. You know, kind of the fundamentals. What questions should they be asking?
Boy, I'll tell you, if I had to start anywhere, I would be asking questions about, you know, what is it that's really important to that other person? You know, what do they value? What's significant in their world? And because that, you know, the basis of you know, what creates a, you know, a great relationship is that common bond. And so I guess if you're asking any questions there, I'd say, you know, what's most important to the other person? You know, what is it that they value most? What is it that, you know, makes them feel happy and fulfilled?
Yeah.
You know, and then just elevate the weight of that in your mind.
Yeah.
And more than anything else, I think that's what makes a big difference in relationships.
Definitely. All right, let's talk about money.
There you go.
There's a third one. So what are
Benjamins?
All about the Benjamins, baby. You know, I think you made a point. You made a good point earlier with, you know, where a lot of people's joy and happiness comes from are those relationships, and the importance of health. You know, happy and healthy is a big piece, if not all, of quality of life. But what a lot of people worry about, I think, you know, you so much stress and anxiety and worry comes from the money side of things. Yeah. So in terms of money and what are those, you know, key high payoff activities and what questions should people be asking and when they're reflecting on their financial lives?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I remember years ago I heard a quote from Mae West, who was the actress from the 30s and the 40s, and she said I've had more money and I've had less money, and it's better to have more money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't think that that money can necessarily bring you happiness, but money can decidedly bring you less stress and worry.
Yeah.
You know, and
which definitely helps.
Yeah, which definitely helps. You know, it's you know, being rich and unhealthy or rich and miserable because you have no relationships, that's, mm-hmm. you know, that doesn't really fix your problems. But the, so money won't necessarily make you happy, but it can definitely lower your stress level.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, first and foremost, in from a financial perspective, you know, we've got to, you know, you got to look at, you know, you got to look at money coming in, you got to look at money going out, and you got to look at the direction that it's going out in that really matters. So, yeah. You know, most important things, I would, you know, I think first you got to maximize your income opportunities. So maximize mm-hmm. the funds coming in,
yep.
You know, is important. You know, if you look at the, expenditures, the biggest expenditures for most people, it's you know, for most people it's taxes and, you know, and your mortgage are your, you know, your two biggest expenditures for most people.
Yeah.
And to the extent that you can minimize both of those, that's a good thing. You know, minimize your taxes and try to, you know, get that mortgage payment so it's as, you know, as manageable as possible and paid off as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
I remember years ago, a gentleman had recommended a book to me. It was called The Richest Man in Babylon.
Hmm. It's a good title.
Yeah, it did a good title. Yeah, it was a little paperback book, but, you know, it was kind of written as a parable, you know, so it was a neat book. And one of the things that the book talked about is it talked about the power of tithing, you know. Now, usually when we think of tithing, we think of, like, the church, you know, and, you know, giving a certain amount of money to the church. But the book talked about tithing to yourself first, or paying yourself first. And that's a theme that a lot of very financially successful people have shared, you know, with me over the years is, you know, take a set amount of every dollar that comes into your household, right? You know, I've always looked at it as 10%, you know, and you take that money, you pay yourself first with it. And so, and that's outside of, like, your 401k or retirement, all of those kinds of things, but take 10% of every dollar that comes to your house and put it away, you know, into an investment fund.
Yeah.
And that, again, over time makes a huge difference in, yeah. you know, in somebody's net worth. I started my career in the banking industry and I learned a lot about, you know, finances while working in the banking industry. And one of the biggest things I learned is that the banking industry strategizes every day. There are very, very smart people who sit and think about how can we keep these people paying us interest for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
You know, and
it's their business model.
Exactly. So, you know, so to the extent that we can minimize our personal debt, we break that cycle and we take all of that interest. And then we can put it away into, you know, an investment for ourselves. So, yeah. Minimizing our personal debt is a huge, you know, is a huge piece of that. Consistent with that, and this was another piece of advice somebody gave me years ago, was to adopt a save and buy mentality, where you set a dollar figure, right? So for, like, Michelle and I. Early on in our careers, it was $400, and, you know, anything that costs more than $400, we would save for and then we try to pay cash for, with the exception of houses and cars, right?
Sure.
And the goal is even to get to the point where you are able to do that. But in the early years, you probably can't.
Yeah.
And that, having that save and buy mentality, what it does is it throttles the impulse purchases.
Yeah.
It makes you do the research on things. So that's a huge one. Having a budget and sticking with it, so you have some sense of where your money's going, because most people have no clue.
Yeah.
You know.
They're just shooting from the hip.
Oh, totally. You know, and they wonder why at the end of the month there's no money left. You know? Yeah. Because they just nickel-dimed the hell out of themselves all day long.
Yeah.
You know? And last but not least, you know, you got to learn how to invest, which isn't rocket science. I mean, it looks complicated, but
yeah.
You know what? You know, you go to a mutual fund, you can go out and do the research on them really easily. I'm a big fan of Vanguard because they have low fees, and you go with the index funds. And, you know, Warren Buffett, who's probably the most legendary investor who's ever lived, said it's really hard to beat, you know, an S&P index fund.
Yeah.
You know? So if Warren Buffett's sitting there saying that, it's probably not a bad way for the rest of us who, you know, aren't studying the markets every day to pay attention to.
Right. So in terms of questions, when people are reflecting on their money situation, I think it'd be cool to do a money episode too. We should do that.
Yeah, that actually would be a good one.
In terms of when, you know, people reflecting on their financial situation, what question or questions should they be asking themselves?
Again, going back to our theme of the stress points and in making one positive step each day, I would look at what area of your finances is giving you the most stress. Because, you know, we know that financial troubles give people stress and worry. So what is your pressure point? You know, years ago, when I was in my 20s, I had a bunch of credit card debt, you know, and it weighed on me every day because I was sitting there trying to figure out how am I going to make this minimum payment. And, until I got rid of that credit card debt, nothing else really was all that important. So I think it's figuring out what our biggest financial stressor is and attacking that one, and then going back to what is one positive step that I can do today to make that situation better or to get stronger in that area.
Yeah, just start building the momentum.
Yeah, and just one simple thing, even if it's only taking and putting $1 away towards making a payment at the end of the month or something like that. You know, it's one simple thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, we covered those, each of the three areas in terms of, why don't we do this? I mean, that was a pretty long conversation. Why don't we split this questions into two episodes? We'll cut this one. We'll do this one, about leading yourself, and maybe we do a separate one about leading others. We'll do a part two to the questions episode.
There you go.
All right, so to wrap
up. It's a mini-series.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You got to keep them on the hook.
There you go. Come back next episode, everybody.
Yeah, the suspense.
We'll leave you with a cliffhanger.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Do you have, anything in terms of asking the right questions in our personal lives, leading ourselves, you got any closing thoughts? Or ideas, anything to leave people with?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, that we become what we focus on most often, right? And that is a fact that numerous people have stated in quotes over the course of time. We know psychologically is true. You know, we become what we focus on most often. And so... focus on what it is that we want instead of what it is we don't want, because we become what we focus on most often. If we focus on what it is we don't want, we'll get more of what we don't want.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that's a big one. And we touched on, kind of a central running theme through the conversation today. is, you know, is about what our subconscious mind focuses on today. You know, it focuses on the now, not, you know, it not the past and not the future. And so, you know, we've got to come back and really cycle back to today, to the now. And, you know, who do we want to be today? You know, what is one positive thing that we can do today in, you know, in these different areas of our lives? And just keep thinking about the fact that that success begets success. Yeah. It's about that cumulative theory. And if we're consistently building that positive momentum in the key areas of our lives, you know, we will end up light years ahead of those who are just going through their days.
Compound interest.
There you go.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Everybody listening, stay tuned for part 2.
There you go.
Hey guys, one more thing before you take off. This is Motivational Intelligence Insider. It's just a very short, exclusive email every Monday that comes from Dave, John, and the guests on this show. This is the only place they share their very, very best stuff, and it's delivered right to your inbox every single Monday. This could include exclusive tips for upping your game, articles they're reading, videos they're watching, stories from the road, and on and on. It's the best way to kick off your week, and this content is comes directly from Dave, John, and the guests, and is only available to subscribers of Motivational Intelligence Insider. So if you want these guys and gals to email you their best stuff, go to twological.com/insider. That's the number 2logical.com/insider, and drop in your email. And if you do, I hope you enjoy.
The Motivational Intelligence Podcast is produced by the team at 2Logical. 2Logical is an international corporate training firm and the world's leading expert in motivational intelligence, which is the ability to understand, manage, and change the motives people have. 2Logical offers over 30 different keynotes, workshops, and full training courses to small, medium, and large Fortune 500 companies in 53 countries, a lot of which you're probably familiar with: Pfizer, Bank of America, GE, Constellation Brands, P&G, and more. All solutions are completely customized, and the feedback from these sessions will blow your mind. If you have any training or speaking needs, or just want to say hey, head over to 2logical.com.